This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. In this week's Compass, Charlie Burman talks with Port Townsend Mayor Deborah Stinson and East Jefferson Fire Rescue Chief Jim Walkowski about the pros and cons of the proposal to bring Port Townsend Fire and Emergency Services under the county umbrella, an annexation proposal which is to be addressed by voters in February. So now let's go inside the Compass.
Good afternoon. This is Charlie Burman from KPTZ-FM with a special live edition of Compass. One correction on the pre-recorded intro. Chief Walkowski is ill and has sent Bill Beasley, the highly articulate PR person for East Jefferson Fire and Rescue, to discuss annexation. So we have Deborah Stinson and Bill Beasley. Say hello, Deborah.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, that works. Okay, let's try Bill here. Say hello, Bill.
Hello, Charlie.
Oh, it works. I love it when it works. Okay, the fire annexation of annexing fire services of the city of Port Townsend services into the whole county, not the whole county, East Jefferson Fire Rescue. Vote scheduled for February 12th. Fire and the city have been making rounds, a little tour about, what this means and why it's important. So let's ask the mayor, what does this mean and why is it important?
Great. Thanks, Charlie. I'm going to start with just the basics because it is a rather complex issue. But I think once we get into it, people will see it's pretty clear on why we're trying to achieve this. First of all, annexation means when one entity taxing authority annexes into a different taxing authority, shifting the taxing from one the current entity to the other. So in this case, the city is asking to annex into East Jefferson Fire and Rescue, which is District 1 Fire District. And in that case, the taxing authority that currently goes to the city specifically for fire and EMS services would go away, and that would shift then to the fire district, and they would be bringing in those taxes. So that's basically what annexation is. And why we're doing it now, the city has actually not had their own fire department since 2007. That is when we entered into a contractual agreement with East Jefferson Fire and Rescue to provide those services. So we've been operating this way now since 2007. Those types of agreements are usually struck as the first step towards annexation. They usually last for 1 to 3 years as all the details work out. We've been doing this now for almost 12 years. There's reasons for that we could go into if you're curious, but it's getting tenuous. So it's time to get this job done, and we want to get that done in February. And as you mentioned, it goes out February 12th. And there will be a vote in both the city and in the district. It isn't the county. We're not shifting this to county government. We're shifting it to the fire district, right, which is its own governing entity. And it's only East Jefferson Fire and Rescue. There are four other fire districts in the county.
So what are the boundaries for the district?
Charlie, I can probably answer that. So right now, Jefferson County Fire Protection District number 1, which does business as East Jefferson Fire Rescue, has boundaries on the north side adjacent to the city limits boundary. And then the district covers about 68 square miles today. It includes Marrowstone Island, and it goes down towards right just south of the Port Hadlock area on the east side, where it runs adjacent to Port Ludlow Fire and Rescue, which is District 3. Right in the center of our district, it travels all the way down to Highway 101, and it just touches it in kind of a diamond shape. And then on the west side, our district ends just below Eagle Mount Road, just beyond there. So it's 68 square miles. All the tip of the Quimper Peninsula up to, but not including, the city of Port Townsend as it stands today.
Okay, so Deborah, when you said things are getting tenuous, what does that mean?
Well, it's not tenuous. It's just that this is a contractual agreement. As the chief, if he was here, I hear him say this often. He says it's ink on paper. It really is. year by year, dependent on the individual sitting there. Right now, the citizens of Port Townsend, the taxpayers here, do not have a direct voice in electing representation to the fire district. What they have is out in the district, the district taxpayers elect fire commissioners. And in the city, you elect your city council, and we send three representatives to their board meetings in an oversight capacity, but we do not have voting authority. So when it really comes down to it, the residents of Port Townsend do not have direct representation on determining the level of service that they're going to receive for fire and EMS.
So if this passes, are we in Port Townsend going to be electing a commissioner? Are you going to redraw the lines or what?
Yes, the intent, we actually have a memorandum of agreement between the district and the city that outlines several things that would happen. And the first thing that happens is that the district would set about creating two new fire district commissioners, and we have to go through the county to get those lines drawn because they have to be balanced population-wise, but we anticipate two new positions in the city, two that would be in the current district, and one that kind of straddles the line.
So does that mean the incumbents will get be affected so much? I mean, I remember when the port redistricted,
right,
they got rid of Dave Thomas, I guess, because they didn't,
right,
like him or something.
That hasn't been determined yet where the lines are exactly, but we have the commissioners today are pretty well distributed across the district, so I'm not worried too much about that.
Okay, so how is this going to affect your average citizen? Let's go with how will it affect service.
Go ahead.
Oh, do you want to?
Well, I was going to, regarding service, as a matter of fact, it's going to be fairly seamless. So East Jefferson Fire Rescue provides services to both the district and the city without any thought of a boundary, okay? There's between the city and the district. Right now, our service is based on our service model, our desired response times, the location of calls that we respond to. We have certain centers that tend to be intensive for call volume, and we staff accordingly. So what I think this is actually a benefit of annexation is that post-annexation, there will be no change in the level of service that citizens of the district and the city receive. It'll be seamless in that regard. Now, we do feel that there will be some additional benefits made available to everyone as part of annexation. And those are specifically within the areas of fire prevention and inspection. We will be able to allocate some additional resources to improve and make our fire prevention program a little bit more robust, our inspection program, which will benefit not only the city but the district as well. So there's some enhancements there. But from a day-to-day service perspective, there's really, really no change. We feel that we've got a good business model right now.
Well, I've covered a few fires throughout the years, and I don't think I've ever been to a fire where just one district answered. You're always getting people from, you know, Port Ludlow or Discovery Bay whenever there's a big deal. So, I mean, it seems like it's pretty cross-pollinated as it stands.
Yeah, and that's system-wide throughout the fire service in the United States. We have both automatic aid and mutual aid. And these are agreements that we've entered into with adjacent fire districts a long, long time ago. And the understanding is that on certain calls, usually the really labor-intensive calls, structural fires, CPR calls that require a lot of resources, the adjacent fire districts to District 1 are on an automatic aid program, which means they're part of the run card that Jeffcom Dispatch initiates. So they'll tone out a few East Jefferson units. They'll also maybe tone out a Port Ludlow unit or a Discovery Bay unit or Quilcene as an automatic process. And this keeps us from depleting all of our resources within the district on one call so that we still have people available for a simultaneous call, which actually happens fairly frequently.
Okay, so I just wanted to throw in an unrelated question. I've heard this a lot from, you know, people in bars and stuff where there's a call and there are probably four different trucks coming in. And why are they wasting all our tax money? And why do we need four people to answer that? And I think there is a good answer to that question. So I thought maybe give it to me again.
Sure. Thank you. There are several aspects to that. So one, all of the people that respond to our calls are on duty at that point in time. So there's not a huge amount of additional cost that's being incurred other than the vehicles arriving on scene. Second, and I think certainly more importantly, is most of our apparatus are staffed with two people. So an ambulance or a fire engine usually has two people on it. And what we do is we respond to the initial tone out based on the estimated number of people that we think would not, might need to be involved. And we will regularly stand people down if we determine that that call isn't as severe as was initially toned out. The second thing is, as a 24-hour response agency with somewhat limited resources, we need to make sure that we can address that simultaneous call I just referenced without a reduction in the quality or the response time. So, for example, if we have a structural fire call, maybe in a kitchen or stove, and we send a number of units, several fire engines, several ambulances, if we get toned out to a different type of call while we are on that call, rather than having to travel back to the fire station and change apparatus and get another vehicle, we can respond directly from the scene of the first call. And so that reduces the response time, which is what our service is all about, is keeping the shortest possible response time to the next person's emergency.
Okay, so Deborah, you had something to add.
Yeah, I just wanted to really clarify. I'm not sure we touched on this point, but back in 2007, when we entered into this contractual agreement, we also transferred over all of the personnel, the fire station up on Lawrence Street, all of the equipment. Everything now belongs to East Jefferson Fire and Rescue. So I just want to make sure people understand when Bill says we get this same level of service, we're getting the same level of service primarily because we do have everything being operated as a single entity with controlling all those different assets.
Okay, so service will be the same. What about money?
Okay, money is a little different. We'd like to talk about, we have equitable service today. We've already talked about that we don't have equitable governance. We have different governance structure. The other thing that isn't equitable is cost. When we first set up this contract, it was set on a dollar amount. We looked at the population, the per capita being served in the city, as well as out in the district, and we set a dollar amount at that contract. And then the contract says annually it will be adjusted by the 1% property tax increase and 1/2 of new construction. There's a formula to make sure that dollar amount proceeds on an equal basis. Where the inequitable part comes in, even though the city is paying the same dollar amount, when you look at taxation, you often hear about tax rates. And your tax rate is really based on whatever that dollar amount is as being a percentage of the value of the property being protected. So in the city, as the valuations of the city have gone up, especially post-recession, they went up a little faster than they did out in the district. You will say that even though we're paying the same dollar amount, the percentage I pay for the value of my home is lower than that in the county, therefore my rate is lower. And we really want to correct that. And that's a key aspect of this annexation, is there's no way you can keep that equal through a contractual basis. And we've done some studies. There was actually a time when the county was getting a better deal than the city. So we really want to use annexation, bringing it together under a single taxing authority to correct that problem.
Okay, so I read in the PDN, I believe it said that the county people won't pay any more, but the city people could eventually.
Yes, that is true. Again, the rates are all based off of the current assessed value, and when annexation is approved, the following year, the fire district will have the authority to assess taxes on city properties. And the actual rate won't be determined until that point. So it'll actually be at the end of 2019. When this passes this year, it will be determined towards the end of the year what your tax rate will be in the district, and then that is applied to the city as well. If we were to use 2018 numbers, that's all we had at the time to guesstimate what that's going to be. The difference was about 20 cents per thousand. So on a average the median price for a home in Port Townsend right now is around $300,000. That would mean an increase of about $60 a year to the city residents to put them on par with the rate that's being paid out in the district.
Okay, but I've talked to people around the community who see tax increase, vote no. I mean, it's like a knee-jerk reaction. How do you address that?
Well, I address that a couple of ways. One, we are getting equitable service and we're not paying our fair share. That's the bottom line. And so if we can't do this through annexation, we're going to have to find another fix. And I would imagine that we would, the next step, obviously, if we can't get this through with one or two election rounds, which obviously going back out would probably be another option, we would have to strike a whole new contract with East Jefferson Fire and Rescue. And they're going to want to make sure that this doesn't happen or that we do pay our fair share. And so that could probably happen by the city either having to do a levy lift to raise the taxes to pay the difference. But in that case, we'll be doing equitable cost. We'll be paying our share, but you won't get equitable governance. You won't have your own elected representative. The other thing we could do, if people really didn't want to go that route, we would have to take those monies from other services that can be considered discretionary on the part of the city, things that we really don't think of as discretionary, but they're not mandated services in infrastructure and public safety, things like parks and other things.
So would the message kind of be, you might have to pay $60 more in taxes, but if you don't pay it now, you might pay it later?
Right. I mean, we're going to have to pay for the service that we're receiving. And we do receive good service. And I don't think anybody wants us to reduce the level of service that we're getting from the fire and EMS.
Well, I know there was thoughts you were perhaps going to bring it forward last August or in November, we decided against it. But you held a series of sort of listening sessions. What did you learn during those sessions?
Bill, do you want to start, or would you?
Sure.
Want me to?
Yeah, the city held a series of town hall meetings out at Fort Worden in the spring of 2018, and it was a very structured process that allowed the city to reconvene and revisit the city master plan, to revisit the values and priorities of the city residents, to introduce the issue that we were facing, this disparity in financing and this lack of equitable governance, and really discuss it. And each one of the three town hall meetings, we held a poll, a very detailed and structured poll, and we allowed all the attendees at those to vote what was important to them, priorities that the city is facing, and we had those structure the priorities and identify and list them. We talked a little bit about the history of the relationship with the fire service in the city and how we got to where we're at today. And then we talked about the potential benefits associated with the annexation effort. And people overwhelmingly in those town hall meetings voted that fire and EMS was one of the highest priorities that they valued. And after we laid out all the facts, the people that were in attendance at those meetings also said that annexation makes sense and it is the preferred avenue or venue to go to address the discrepancies and inequities we have today.
Okay, and so what came out of those meetings in terms of when you wrote the measure?
Well, the thing, it took a while, though, to actually come to the point where we were ready to put this on the ballot, because the other things that we did here in that town hall meeting, that we have this in the city, it's what I refer to as a taxing side effect. It's not really that we've talked about the key issues of annexation, which is equitable service, governance, and cost. Those are the things we're voting on with annexation. It's the only thing you're voting on when this goes to the ballot. However, when that happens, there will be a portion of the city's general fund tax, the money we bring in through our general taxing authority, that will not be taken away from us. We have some monies that's specifically dedicated to fire and EMS. That authority goes away. But there's another 59 cents per thousand that does remain in our authority to raise and use for general fund purposes. And this is a concern. It was a concern of councils. I know when this first came up, the first thing we did was ask the state, can we give back that taxing authority so it has to be voted back in? And they said, no, once you have that authority, it doesn't go away. So we realized, okay, we're going to have to live up to our tradition of making commitments to the voters that should this go through, we will only, if we decide to use that money, we'll go through certain procedures to ensure it's only being used for purposes that the residents want. And I can go into the details of what we came up there with there. We have a lot of checks and balances put in place for that. If we have the time, I'll go into it.
So just because you can do this doesn't mean that you should.
Yeah, or that we will, exactly. Mm. And it's just like in the past with the library levy that the taxpayers voted in. They wanted to make that investment, but we said we would only phase it in over a three-year period. That's exactly what happened. Here at Mountain View, we just passed a bond initiative. We had to go for the full amount, but we made the commitment that only 50% of that would come from property taxes, that we would find the other 50% from other means. We have followed through with that. This is a little bigger lift for people. When they see that 59 cents per thousand, it's going to be a larger amount. So we did work with the state and found that there is a way to, you can't tie a future council's hands with a resolution. We just can't do that. And as you know, we have elections coming up. Things can change. So we found another way through working with the state that said we could enter into a contractual agreement with the fire district that says we will phase that money in over a four-year period of time. And when we do, it can only be used for very specific purposes that our taxpayers have already told us are a high priority in the city. So we have that in place.
Okay, so we live in the middle of this technological firestorm here where stuff being invented all the time. In terms of firefighting, are there lots of new bells and whistles that you guys could buy and make life easier? And if so, would this pay for, how do you pay for them? And maybe this is how you do it.
Right. No, this initiative is not about increasing our coffers in that sense, not at all. It's really about making sure that people have the right degree of oversight, broad representation to streamline the process that we have right now. When we have initiatives that we want to put forward, we have to pass them both in the district and in the city, which is cumbersome for us. The fire service is, I'd like to think that we're pretty efficient today. We're pretty streamlined. Our apparatus is in fairly good shape. Our stations are in good shape. The challenge that we face today is our increasing call volume while holding our finances fairly steady. I believe our call volume has increased 30 or 40% since 2010, and yet our full-time career staff members have increased from 30 to 32 over that same 8-plus-year period of time. So we're realizing some compression there. But primarily, it's just making sure that we have the appropriate staff to provide the level of service that the citizens of both the district and the city require and have voted for.
Okay, so in terms of opposition, I can't see any reason that anyone outside of Port Townsend would oppose this. And maybe those inside who, are concerned about money. Maybe I shouldn't be editorializing here, but I'm setting up the question is, who are the opposition and, how are you convincing them?
Well, as far as we know, there is no organized no campaign. I think once people really look at the issue, they see what we've done to protect, to maximize the level of service we've been able to achieve through the recession and all to make this the current process work. I think people want to be able to maintain what we have, and they see that is at risk if we, keep doing it through the methods that we've had. And so I think most people want to see this happen. Again, it's a pocketbook issue, especially for the people in the city. And we recognize that. And so I'm going back to this contractual agreement just to let you know that the first year that this goes into effect, we are committed to not touching any of that 59 cents. We have a contractual agreement. We also have a financial policy that the state auditors will hold us to make sure that that doesn't happen. We also put in a that policy does ensure that in the subsequent years, we bring in people through a public hearing process to allow everybody to give us comment and feedback on how that's phased in. And again, anytime we use that money, it'll be for very specific high priority issues like affordable housing, streets, parks capital, or even some utility tax relief. Those are the only areas we can use that money in the first 4 years.
And Charlie, I'd like to address a couple of rumors that have come out specific to districts of the or citizens of the district. We've heard some district citizens express concerns about this is some sort of a city takeover of the fire district or the city's gaining control. It's actually the opposite of that. We have three city council members, including the mayor, who have done a great job sitting in on this joint board in an advisory capacity. With annexation, this would allow them to step back to their regular jobs as city council members representing the city with city issues, and the enhanced fire board would take that place. And so actually the city is being removed from the day-to-day oversight of the fire district completely.
Okay, so let's say this passes and redistricting, and now we're going to have five fire commissioners. Why would someone want to be a fire commissioner?
I think for the same reasons that people want to become a city council member or a county commissioner or a port commissioner. Quite often, fire commissioners have experience, personal experience in the fire service, and they understand how it works. And these would be people who are interested in making sure that they have the highest possible level of service for the dollars that are being paid for that service. And so we actually do have a fair number of retired firefighters from all around the Puget Sound that live in the Port Townsend area, we've learned, both in the district and in the city of Port Townsend. And so we feel that there are a number of resources available and people who would be willing to step forward and perhaps run for office to become a fire commissioner to be able to have a direct voice in how the district operates.
Okay, well, I'm here with Deborah Stinson, mayor of Port Townsend, and Bill Beasley, information officer for East Jefferson Fire Rescue, discussing fire annexation. The ballot's coming up February 12th. We have just a few minutes, seconds left, and now that I have the mayor here, I want to ask an unrelated question. Oh, geez, one of those. How's the whole new city manager thing going right now?
I'm feeling pretty confident about it right now. We assigned a task force to help us with this issue. You know, the city council held our own strategic planning process early in the year to make sure that we had a very clear vision of what we needed the next city manager to do so we could advertise appropriately on that. But then we turned that over to the citizen task force of over a dozen city residents that represent a pretty broad spectrum of our residents, and they've been working really hard to come up with the competencies and core skills that we would want to see in a new city manager. So they're actually helping us in that process. We're going to be getting that update later this month, and then as soon as we have that, we're going to be going out and advertising and bringing in new candidates.
Okay, we are talking to Mayor Deborah Stinson of Port Townsend, East Jefferson Fire Rescue's Bill Beasley. We thank you both for coming in and remind everyone to vote on February 12th. Thank you for coming, guys.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Compass host Charlie Burmant interviewing Port Townsend Mayor Deborah Stinson and East Jefferson Fire Rescue Chief Jim Walkowski about the Fire and Emergency Services annexation proposal, which is to be addressed by voters in February. The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. and repeats the following Saturday at noon. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, This is Compass Executive Producer Steve Evans.